God bless you, and welcome to Maranatha Fellowship, and welcome especially to Zambia Sunday. This is where you clap. Zambia Sunday. Before I ask Mark to come up, I just want to say that I'm grateful for you being here today. I'm grateful for whatever part that you're willing to play. If you don't know what is happening this morning and it just happens to be your first time and you sort of wandered in, you get an opportunity to see one of the things that Maranatha Fellowship does, and that is reach out to Zambia. And we do that both personally through people who have been here, who have been there from here, and people who continue from here to go there. And we are looking for resources, but more than anything today, we're looking for you to make a connection with the ministry that is happening over in Zambia. And so I would ask that you would give Mr. Mark First a warm welcome as he comes up to share with you today.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning. Alan, can you hear me? I remembered your name. Okay, I'm looking around and I see some faces. Mahima, thank you for being here. I see your family. I'm glad you're here. And I see Robin, and I see Helen, and Eric, and Paula, and Mike, and Gail, and others that are here. Ah, I see Patricia, you're here, and you brought some friends, and I'm glad, and maybe there's some others, and I'm really glad you're here, and I thank you for coming, and maybe there's still others coming for the spaghetti dinner afterwards, and now I need to deliver now, because you guys have, some of you have come a long way, and I thank you for that, and so I'm going to talk to you about a place that's far away, and I'm going to take you from here to there, and maybe even further away. Noelle mentioned my daughter Krista, and the very first slide is a picture of where's Lee. So for those of you who don't know, Lee's my wife, and she was supposed to be here with me, and Krista, our daughter, is expecting her first child. It's going to be a boy, and it's due April 14th, but on Friday, she went into false labor and went to the hospital, and they checked her in, and she was there for several hours, and then they said, why don't you go home, because nothing's going to happen, and then Krista and Lee got on the phone, and one thing led to another, and she said, Mommy, I want you here, so Saturday morning, she got in the car, and that's the picture of the departure, and that turtle top that's on the top of the car is loaded with lots of baby stuff. So she left Saturday, and she got to Knoxville last night, and she's from Knoxville on the rest of the way, and she should be there sometime today. So I think what it really was that she didn't want to be part of cooking all the spaghetti, so she found a way out and talked Krista into getting her out of here. So don't tell her I said that. But I do want to tell you a little bit about Krista. For some of you, you've heard this story before, and for others, it'll be new. But our daughter, Krista, whose heart was touched by missions, mainly because of Pastor Russ, who was the pastor here for about 400 years, I think. He hides it quite well, but his heart was for missions. And while our congregation has been small, our reach has been far, and we've touched people around the world. And Krista always had a heart for missions and went on a number of missions trips as a teenager. And then when she graduated from college, she came home and said, I'm going to go to Africa this summer. And, okay, where? And she said, Zambia. And I had to go get a map and find out where Zambia was because I didn't know. And why are you going? Well, I'm going to work with orphan kids. Why are they orphans? Because of AIDS. Oh, gee, okay. Just what you want your little girl to be all around. And so she went, and she was gone about 3 weeks. And when she came home with tears in her eyes at the airport, she said, Daddy, that's where I belong. And she proceeded to quit the job she had just gotten with Smith Barney as a financial analyst with lots of potential for making lots of money, and went to work full-time for Family Legacy, a ministry that we knew very little about, and moved to Dallas, Texas, a place we had just moved here back from. And then for the next 3 or so years, traveled back and forth from Dallas, Texas to Lusaka, Zambia, and worked with Family Legacy Missions and orphan children. And you know how it is, little girls and their daddy. She had me wrapped firmly around her finger, and she said, "Daddy, you gotta go." And I'm like, "I'm not going to Africa. It's hot there." And little did I know that Zambia is south of the equator and therefore not so hot, and our summer is their winter. And we went to Dallas for a fundraiser, and I was in a room of about 850 people, and the guest speaker was a fellow named Nevers Mumba, who spoke in a manner that pierced my heart. And when he got done speaking, that room was very quiet, and there wasn't a dry eye in the place. And the Lord spoke to me at that moment, because I was looking for Krista, who was working the event, and the Lord said, "I'm using your little girl to get to you. Are you in or not?" The Lord often speaks that way. And I said, "Okay, I'll go." And I went, and it changed everything. I didn't know what to expect, and I didn't know whether I would fit in or how I would behave. But I knew I was done on the afternoon of the first day when I realized that the 12 boys that I was working with, that were 9, 10, and 11 years old, were fighting with each other to hold my hand. And I knew that my life was never going to be the same. And I wept every night, and I rejoiced every day. And it was an amazing experience. And I've come home, and you guys are probably getting tired of hearing me talk about Zambia, but I'll tell you right now, nary a day goes by that I don't talk about Zambia. And there's friends here from work and neighbors and people that I've met, friends and family, and you could probably testify that I talk about my boys in Zambia and Promise House and Camp Life and my heart's desire to go there someday and maybe stay for a long time, but that's really what this is about. And I'm going to talk to you about Camp Life. I'm going to talk about Promise House and tell you what that is and the needs in Zambia. But enough about Lee. Let's talk about where we are. So I work for NASA, so I thought I'd start from a very far away place. That's the Milky Way. I don't know how the fellow who put that "you are here" determined that you are here, but let's start at the macro view. You are there. Anybody want to argue with me about whether we are actually right there? We can discuss that later on. But here's our solar system, and just to put you in the correct orientation, you are here, the third planet from the brightest spot in the center of the solar system, which is called the Sun. How clever of us to name it that way. And it's called the Earth. And then here we are on planet Earth. Everybody knows that it's called planet Earth. Did you ever wonder if the Martians call it Mars? Think about that one for a minute. And then you are here. That little arrow is pointing towards the Central East Coast in a little area called College Park, Maryland. And then here's a map of the world. It's not really flat. I think Chris Columbus, and few people will argue about whether he determined that or not, but there we are, the map of the world and all the continents and the oceans, and there's Antarctica down at the bottom. And that's what the world looks like when you flatten it out. And we fly from Dulles Airport to a place called Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, or the UAE, which is in the Middle East. And it's about 7,000 miles away, and it takes about 10 hours to get there. You leave about the middle of the day, and you get there at about 8 o'clock in the morning. And when you get there, it's craziness. And Dubai is a very interesting place. They have more money than you can imagine. They are obscenely rich, and they build buildings and architecture in ways that shame most of the rest of the world. The architecture is fabulous. The road systems are amazing. And they have enough money that they go out in the Arabian Sea, dredge up a lot of sand, and build these really fancy-looking islands. That one's called the Palm. They have one that looks like the world, and then they have another one. Actually, they have four of them. They've had so much money that they build islands that look like other things. And they have so much money that they're in the Arabian Desert, where it was 121 degrees. I didn't know it got that hot, but it does. So they built a mall that has a ski resort inside of it. That's how much money they have. Just let that kind of soak in for a moment. And then how many of you like to drive fast cars? I really do. So if you want to get paid to drive fast cars, you want to be on the police force there, because they have the fastest police cars in the world in Dubai. So be a cop in Dubai, because you get to drive really fast police cars there. So when we go to Dubai, what's kind of interesting is we're going to a place where the people are obscenely rich, to Lusaka, which is where people are obscenely poor. So then we fly from Dubai. And by the way, when we get into Dubai at 8 o'clock in the morning, the connecting flight is at 9:25. You have an hour and 25 minutes to get from the gate where you get off the plane to the gate where you get on the plane. An hour and 25 minutes for an international flight is not much time. You get off the plane, and then you get on the plane. And then you're on that plane for another 10 hours. So it's like being in an airplane, a tin can, for 24 hours. Now, I'm a big guy, and I am convinced that aluminum in the air at 40,000 feet, the longer it flies, the smaller it gets. So I'm like, can't we get out of this thing? But Emirates is a really great airline. It's very nice to fly with, and they take very nice care of you. But you fly from Dubai to Lusaka, and you get in about 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the Lusaka International Airport, which is an interesting place. And you get off the plane on the tarmac, and the weather is beautiful. It's in the 70s. It's very arid. The Lusaka is about the same elevation as Denver, so it's about the Mile High City. For people like me, very fair. You got to wear sunscreen, or you'll get toasty red real fast. And you check in. A lot of the people that are on the airplane are camp lifers. That sounds like you've done something wrong. But get all your bags. And the last several trips that we've taken as many as 10 checked bags, which is a lot of baggage, because we're taking underwear and socks and clothes and supplies and all this other stuff. And we carry all of that, and so do all the other camp lifers that are coming. So they have these buses and trucks and all this stuff, and we all gather together, and then we go from the airport to a place called the Tree of Life. Now, Family Legacy is a ministry that only does work in Zambia. A lot of other ministries, like World Vision, they do work with orphans and the poor all over the world, but Family Legacy is focused exclusively in Zambia. And that's primarily because the fella who runs Family Legacy is a guy named Greer Kendall, whose parents were missionaries, and he was actually born in Lusaka in 1964, which coincidentally is the year of their independence. It's their 1776, except it happened in 1964. And they also broke away from the Brits, only they did it peacefully. It took the Brits about 200 years to figure out, maybe they ought to break away without bullets flying. And so the Brits gave them independent rule in 1964. That's the year that Greer Kendall was born. His parents lived there till he was about 6 years old. He moved to Dallas, Texas, and they raised him there. He did become a Dallas Cowboys fan. Don't hold that against him. He's a pretty good guy. Any Cowboys fans here? Really? Okay, they have therapy for that. We'll talk with you later. So, in 1999, as an adult, he went back to the land of his birth and wanted to find out how was Lusaka doing. And when he got there, in the interleaving time, AIDS had decimated the 20, 30, and 40-year-old generation, and there were children, orphans, everywhere. And as he was walking the streets of many of the compounds there, which is really a nice word for the slums, he believed that God said, I want you to do something about that. Now, you know, for many of us, that would be pretty intimidating. You know, how do you deal with a problem so big? And rather than shrink from it, he said, okay, Lord, I'm going to dig in. And that's where he ended up taking on the challenge of trying to do something about this amazing problem of dealing with orphans on an amazing scale in Lusaka, Zambia, and that's why they only do work in Zambia. So there's Zambia, a little small place in comparison to the rest of the landmass of the world. And here you are. You've arrived in Zambia, virtually. You've arrived there with me, and you're now entering Zambia. So Zambia, I'm sorry? Well, there you go. Tell them happy birthday for us. Okay, it's about the size of Texas. It has a population of about 13 million people, but 50% of their population is under the age of 16. So half the population are children. I mean, for those of you who are 16, I'm not calling you children, but in a sense, the entire population, half of them are kids. And over a million of them are orphans. I mean, that's just staggering. They are the number one country in the world for percentage of orphans to non-orphans of every other country on the planet. And the primary reason for this is AIDS. AIDS has just decimated the country. They're at 80% unemployment. When we talk about unemployment here in the United States, Jerry, good to see you, brother. What's the unemployment rate just rounded out in the United States? It's around 5% or so. We get worked up when it gets to 6 or 8 or something like that. I mean, we really get nervous about it because it has a huge effect on our economy, us personally and everything. Can you imagine what the United States would be like if it was 80%? It's just it's staggering. People do anything they can to make a dollar. I mean, we're talking they sell tomatoes on the side of the road. There are women there that have a hammer, a pile of big rocks, and they make little rocks out of them, put them in a plastic bag, and sell them. You may say, what do I do with a little box of a bag of rocks? Well, they use them to make hard surfaces for people to walk on in their homes and stuff like that. It's unbelievable. Furthermore, only 5% of the population graduate from high school, 12th grade. 5%. So you people in the group here that have children, if you knew that only 5% of the population was going to graduate from high school, it would probably be pretty amazing thing to think about, don't you think? 5%. So the cycle of poverty continues, unabated, because it's a staggering problem. All right, so here's the United States. This is statistics taken in 2014, and it really just shows the distribution of men and women and the average ages and the average age of life expectancy. And if you look at it, you know, it kind of looks like a cruise ship, doesn't it? The shape of a cruise ship. And you can see that, you know, it's about 10 to 11 or so million people. And the average age expectancy looks like it goes into the mid-60s or so, and then you start seeing people, the age expectancy starts going down, right? That's the United States, 2014. That's Zambia. Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, it's staggering. And that's where you can see that half the population is under the age of 16, because after that, your life expectancy is just plummeting. The average age, age expectancy a few years ago was 38 years old. Now, it has been rising. It is going into the 40s now, but yeah, it's pretty bad. So why do we go? Why do we go? Well, we go for camp life. That's one of the reasons why we're going. So each week or each summer, the Family Legacy Missions runs 7 weeks of camp life, which is like vacation Bible school on steroids. I mean, it's amazing. It's all day long. Helen went with me last year. Sharon went a few years ago. Rachel Ryan went. And each week, it's a different group, and it's Americans. It doesn't have to be Americans. I think they're even letting Canadians in now. It's just amazing. It doesn't have to be Americans. It's an American ministry, but you know, anybody can come that wants to. And there's about 100 that come each week, and for each person that comes, 10 to 12 kids get to come to camp. But now the kids that are coming, these aren't kids whose mom and dad are saying, okay, we're getting rid of Tommy for a week so that we can get some breathing room in the summertime. That was an announcement from our broadcaster. These are the kids from the compounds, the slums, the poorest of the poor. Mom and dad aren't around, and these kids are getting to come to camp. And it's like the most exciting thing that's ever happened to them in their whole life. Those kids come to camp for that week, the next week, the next week, the next week. It's a different group of Americans that are coming in. It's a different group of kids that are coming to camp. And that's Monday through Friday. And so they have big sessions, which are a lot of fun. And I'm going to show you a video in just a couple minutes. And then there's small groups afterwards, and you play games and have discussions. You do this thing called blessing times, where through the course of the week, you break off with each kid, each child, and you spend about an hour with each one of them, and you ask the most intimate, personal, in-your-face, nosy questions that you can imagine to find out what's going on in this child's life. Are they by themselves? Meaning, are their parents gone? Are they eating? Are they sleeping? Do they have dreams that are horrible? And they do. Are they being abused, both physically and sexually? The little girls, they are. And I'm not going to go too far on that. On Thursday, you actually go into the compounds where the kids live, and you do all kinds of things, from everything from going into their homes, and you meet whoever their caretaker is. The kids, through the course of the week, are learning this little thing called Evangicube, which is a way of presenting the gospel. And these kids are amazing, unrestrained whatsoever. They will run up to anybody and start witnessing to them. And they are tenacious about leading them to Christ. And it's just amazing to watch what's going on. And then you also get to visit the Family Legacy schools that are there. And there are now Family Legacy schools in all of the compounds, and there's 18 of them. And one of the videos that you're going to see is going to talk about how Family Legacy has over 10,000 kids that are in their schools. It's much more than that. They're approaching 12,000 now. The video is about a year and a half or more older. And then on Friday, it's like Christmas. It's a big day. It's a big celebration, and the kids know it, that they're going to get gifts, and they're going to get school supplies, and they're going to get sweets because they don't get candy. And it's all very exciting, and they have a lot of fun. This year, it's backpacks with school supplies in it, and they're going to just go nuts over it. So, AJ, you've got a video that we're going to show. It's about 4 minutes long, and Helen, you're in it. Helen and her daughter, Megan, went with us last summer. So if you're really paying attention, you might be able to see Lee and I in here. So anybody sees Lee and I in here, $10, it's yours. Roll the video. Anybody see me? That's good. That's good. Yeah. All right. Okay, so the next reason that we go is to go to Promise House. So Promise House, when we came back, we raised money to build Promise House. And, I want you to do the math, okay, for the camp lifers that are there, every night you make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And there's two for you, there's two for your evangelist, which is one of your translators, two for your apostles, another one of your translators, and two for the deacons. Those are the people that run around making things happen. So every night you make eight peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So you make eight peanut butter and jelly sandwiches 5 days a week, that's 40. There's 100 camp lifers, so that's 4,000 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches made each week, times seven, that's 28,000 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And I figure since 2008, which I'm pretty sure that's when they started doing seven camp lives. That's a quarter of a million peanut butter and jelly sandwiches being made in Zambia, which is a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Just, you know, and they have great ice cold milk there. Okay, the other reason is the Father's Heart trip, which we take on Saturday, and what we do is most of the kids that we work with are in two of the compounds, and there's 18 of them at a place called George and Chihuahua. And we have a party with the kids, and we take them gifts of clothing and school supplies and a lot of other stuff. And we spend several hours with them, visiting with them at the school that they go to, and spend time with them. Then we go back to the Tree of Life, which is 200 acres that they bought. That's where you saw most of the video being shot there. Where the Legacy Center is, that's where the Promise House is built. Oh, and yeah, keep going. And then you have a lot of fun with the kids. It's an all-afternoon thing. It's a big picnic, and they play games, and you have a lot of fun, and you cry, and you pray, and you wish you weren't leaving, and you want to stay, and it's a mess, and everybody kind of loses composure, and it's really kind of a sad day, but it's a lot of fun, and you can't wait to come back. And then here's a picture of Lee and I out in front of Promise House with the 12 boys that live there. Now, actually, between last year and this year, one or two of the boys have actually, they've grown, and they're now living in the next stage of house because they're getting ready to go to college. College. They're going to go to college. So it's just amazing. All right, so you may be asking, well, why is it called Promise House? And it's called Promise House because that's what the name that the Lord gave me to call it. And it's because of the promise that these guys, these children, I believe, have of what's inside of them and what's going to be coming about from them. And then we have, at some point, Lee and I talk about maybe starting our own 501c3 ministry. And if you don't know what that is, I'll explain it later. I got to move along a little faster because I got another video that I want to show you. But Psalm 92, verse 12 through 15 says, "But the godly will flourish like palm trees and grow strong like the cedars of Lebanon." So I call the kids that live there the cedars of Zambia. "And for they are transplanted to the Lord's own house," because these kids have been taken from the slums and been transplanted into good soil. "And they will flourish in the courts of God. Even in old age, they will still produce fruit, and they will remain vital and green. And they will declare, 'The Lord is just. He is my rock. There is no evil in him.'" So Psalm 92, this verse, is the verse that led us to make it the verse for Promise House. So now I'm going to show you the Promise House t-shirts. How many people, how many churches have you been to where they've taken clothes off in the pulpit? Not many. So we are cutting edge here. So this is the Promise House t-shirt, okay? So it's got our own logo that we worked with. Jennifer MacArthur, a former Columbus employee. She was our graphics design person. And it says Promise House on it, but it also on the back says Cedars of Zambia, and it's got the reference to Psalm 92 on it. And how many of you like this shirt? Show hands. How many of you like it? How many of you don't like this shirt? Okay, so by default, he doesn't have to buy one, okay? And so I'm going to assume that everybody else likes this shirt because they're for sale downstairs. And Helen, right? Everybody say, "Good morning, Helen."
Good morning.
Now everybody say, "Helen, I can't wait to write you a check to buy one of these t-shirts." Okay, Mahima knows how to follow directions. Okay, so after service is over and we go downstairs to eat spaghetti and enjoy that, make sure you buy a t-shirt to take it home, and you can show it to your friends about your Promise House t-shirt that no one else will have. You'll be cutting edge. Forget the, you know, the t-shirts that say whatever. Does anybody have a t-shirt that says whatever? Okay, anyway, you can have a Promise House t-shirt, one of a kind, and then you can tell them all about your nutty friends that go to Zambia. All right, here we go. It's not working. It's okay, so real quick, I want to tell you about so what, right? So what? You are making a big difference by helping here. This is Richard. Richard, when he was a kid living in the compounds, would look up at the sky and see great big airplanes going by and never thought that he'd ever get an opportunity to fly an airplane, design airplanes, buy airplanes, any of that stuff. But because of people like you, Richard went to Camp Life. Because people like you sponsored people like me to go to Camp Life, and he got to come to Camp Life. And then people like you sponsored him to go to school. And Richard is now studying aeronautic engineering. And he's going to go to college. That's Richard. This group of 22 people that are here, they are high school graduates who attended a seminar that was put on by a group from Uganda that came in to train them on how to open up their own businesses. And they're in a program called the Excel Beyond Scholarship Program, which is run by Family Legacy. And it's all about teaching their kids about how to start their own businesses. And for 1 year between graduation and college, because they're all going to college, they're going to college, they're going to learn about how to manage a business. Why? Because of people like you. This is Rosa. Rosa had some terrible things to her. Her father left to go to another province in Zambia. After he was gone for a while, he stopped sending money home. They found out that her father married another woman, stopped sending money home, and then he got AIDS. Then he died. Then her mom got AIDS, and she died. Rosa was trying to go to school, couldn't, dropped out of school. But in 2010, Rosa got to go to Camp Life. And she got sponsored to go to school. In 2015, Rosa got accepted into nursing school. She's graduated and is now going to nursing school. She was part of an International Women's Day that was held in Lusaka, Zambia, along with a bunch of other young women that are part of the Family Legacy Ministry group that represented them at an International Women's Day festival that was held in downtown Lusaka, Zambia. Why? Because of people like you. All right, guys. This is a church. You know, there's a lot of people out there that talk about church as if it was something that was bad. So what does it mean? What is pure? You know, you think you hear the word pure all the time. Dove talked about it all the time. Dove, pure soap. What is undefiled? It has all kinds of meanings, right? Religion, oh my gosh. Does that get bad press? All the time it does. And it's got so many different meanings to so many different people. James says that pure and undefiled religion in the sight of God and Father is this. This is worth paying attention to. To visit, which in some translations means to care for, orphans and widows in their distress. When you do what you're doing right now, so you are doing pure and undefiled religion right this moment, you're doing it. You're caring for the orphans. And God says, that is, in my sight, that's good stuff. And that's what you are doing right now. You know, when you go home this afternoon, you can feel good that you have, you know for a fact, I've done something good. I went right past the video I wanted to show. And it's 12:04. Are you guys okay to watch one more video? Are you guys okay? Now, I got to tell you, I'm sorry, it's 15 minutes. Do you want to see it? Play it. I got one yes. That's enough. You guys, you're stuck. Okay.
If you think you know what it is to be an orphan,
most days, I wish my auntie and her boyfriend never took me in. For I don't know if I will survive the end of his drunken feast.
No one even sees me. Most times, this is best, for I'm treated like a dog when they do. I am an orphan. This I know.
What can I call home? I am always running, hiding. I am afraid to close my eyes.
I have lost count. But I cannot help but fear it happening again. But I know it will.
I am an orphan, this I know. Can the life I know ever change? I don't see how.
Hope. You won't find much of it in the slums of Lusaka, Zambia. But there's a glimmer growing, and it comes at a significant time. 2014 ushers in Zambia's 50th year as a nation. Though these years have certainly come with some notable achievements, these children have had little reason to celebrate, for they are the outcast orphans of this nation. They fought for survival in the merciless slums of Lusaka, and achieved little more than that.
We have more than 1 million orphans in Zambia, and I am one of them.
And with their future well resembling that of their parents, these children are threatened by a vicious and unending generational cycle.
In the case of Zambia, if something doesn't change, then the next 50 years will look even worse, sadly, than the first 50 years and the ravages of even the last 20 years. Zambia is a country on the brink of disaster. It's a wonderful country, but it's a country that is dying on the vine because of lack of education, because of poverty.
Our life expectancy is one of the lowest in the world. I know this because both my parents have already died.
I think any demographer, any politician, any statistician, any pastor would tell you the next 50 years of Zambia have to be impacted through education.
They want to learn, and they know what it looks like if you don't learn there. If you don't at least speak good English, you're stuck in the world of their compound, their slum, for the rest of your life. Breaking rocks or selling tomatoes or falling into that life of despair and getting drunk like most of the men in the slums do.
These kids already know what they don't have, and they're begging for it. Apart from Jesus, this is their way out of the poverty that they find themselves in every day, and they know that.
But in Zambia, government school is for the privileged, and the orphan child never is. Even for those privileged enough, the odds are stacked against them.
Only 5% of all children will finish grade 12. No one in my family ever has.
From the beginning, Family Legacy's vision has been to transform Zambia, one child at a time. But we knew it couldn't be done without education. So the solution of Lifeway Christian Academies was developed, and the construction of schools right there in the slums of Lusaka began. This is the chance these orphan children have hungered for. Inside these walls, greatness is being discovered. Courage is being cultivated. Identities reborn. And distant doors of opportunity, closed to children like these, are being thrown open wide. Yes, here, inside these walls, the future of a nation is being rewritten. And now, Family Legacy has 18 schools with 10,000 children attending.
There's the government of Zambia educating a large number, obviously, in their role as government. There's the Catholic Church. After that, Family Legacy currently is the second largest private educator of children in the nation of Zambia.
It's unlike any other education that these kids would have access to, because we hire teachers who really care about these kids.
Family Legacy has invested very heavily in developing our Zambian teachers. We've provided our teachers with the kind of teacher training that even some of the best schools in America have not received.
And because our Lifeway Christian Academies are structured with a ratio of one teacher for every 25 to 30 students, these sought-after, well-trained teachers are giving each child the individual attention needed to excel.
The passion for this ministry is not just to send out great leaders. The passion is for them to lead the country, lead the future from a biblical perspective, and turn that country on its head for Christ.
The kids are learning the Word of God. They're learning character. And this will carry them far beyond the student that simply learns reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Through our Disciple One program, they are taught about their place in the kingdom of God, teaching them character and how to live a Christ-like life. They are ministered to and counseled through the seemingly insurmountable challenges they face as an orphan of Zambia. And through our Feed One program, they are fed a nutritious meal each school day.
The younger ones, they would come and they would just sit and cry in class because they were so hungry. A lot of these kids eat once a day, if that. So it's been hugely impactful. The kids can now sit through class longer. They're more awake, they're more alert, they're more focused.
The impact and success of our Lifeway Christian Academies has been so significant that enrollment of new students is on the rise at a rate of thousands every year. While this is certainly something to celebrate, the impending challenges we now face are not. In these impoverished areas, new schools are desperately needed. We are aggressively seeking and have located land for construction, but we lack the funds to bring these locations to life. The greatest need, however, may be how we address the tidal wave of students rushing toward eighth grade.
The challenge for us is that there aren't enough high schools to handle these kids.
Our Lifeway Christian Academies are primary schools, which consequently end with seventh grade. The students who we have for years poured into will soon reach the end of our system and be left with no real alternative.
Government school is very hard to get into, just because of the magnitude of how many kids are in the community. There's very few spots available because there's very few schools available for these kids to go to.
Why take a child who in primary school was in a 25 or 30 to 1 ratio classroom environment And all of a sudden, because they're in the eighth grade, you're putting them into 100 or 125 to 1 ratio high school. You're going to lose so much of what you've invested. Why put them into a secular environment where the Christian worldview is not explicitly woven through all aspects of education? And that's why 2014, job one, we've got to have high schools, and we need them now.
Our high schools will be equipped with the tools needed to give our kids the greatest chance to become the leaders God is calling them to be. The room sizes will maintain our priority of a low student-to-teacher ratio while accommodating a vast number of classrooms. And because we believe God wants the best for these lowest and least of society, the facilities throughout will be constructed with the excellence for which you've come to know Family Legacy.
We're investing so much ministry and so much education into these kids, and we want to be able to carry that on up through grade 12. Because what a shame would it be if we were able to give our kids these education up to grade 7 and then there was nothing for them.
Zambia has 1 million orphans. They do. That's a huge number. It's a number that is beyond the reach of any single organization. And our plan of action is pretty basic, pretty simple. Educate the least and the last of these, and they will do the rest of the work.
The beauty of this ministry is that it touches these kids one child at a time.
Faith is the conviction of what you don't see. We are sitting here in 2014. We do not see 2064. But as an organization, our focus is to see the next 50 by faith and believe it.
To some, these are just buildings, nothing more than a structure. But what happens here could not carry greater significance. These walls of brick and mortar will be witness to the impossible, to the miraculous. The faces that grace these desks will change. The teachers who guide our students may change. But the constant will be what is achieved here. History will be made. From outcast of society to the esteemed and followed leader. Other school systems may only see 5% of their students graduate, but Family Legacy's Lifeway Christian Academies will flood Zambia's industries with brilliant minds and hearts passionate for God. Leaders who never forget how their story began or how they were rescued.
When you are thinking about these guys being businessmen in the community, being teachers, being doctors, being government officials, that by the time they're 17 and 18 years of age, they would stand out among their peers. There's no question.
This nation has never seen anything like it. And in the next 50 years, we are confident it will be said of these walls, Zambia's president learned the ABCs here. That renowned character and love for God that was developed here.
Why not one of those kids as the president of that country? Again, if we do what God has called us to do, they will be some of the best educated kids in that country.
A nation is made great by its people. These are the great ones. Some of you have witnessed their greatness firsthand. You've seen it in their eyes, in the way they're overcoming all life has thrown at them, in the way they've responded to God's calling. Now it's time to invest in that greatness, to support the hope and future God promised them.
The body of believers that are in this room right now have brought all of this together, and we pray that the funds and the resources will keep being there to sustain the lifelong education of these kids.
Yes, these are walls of history made, places full and flowing with stories of transformed lives. But now, we need more of these places. Ever our mission, we are transforming Zambia, one child at a time. And we don't want to tell one child there's no room for you here.
My name is Roy, and I am the next 50 years of Zambia.
I am the next 50.
I am the next 50.
I am the next 50.
We are the next 50 years of Zambia.
I'm way over. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your help. Thank you for caring. Thank you for giving. Thank you for your support. There's a button right there. It says, help is on the way. Eric, I know you've been in Building 23, and you've ridden that elevator. It's the slowest one on the planet. First time I ridden that elevator, I thought I was going to get stuck in it. And there's a sign on it, and it says, when the light is flashing, help is on the way. And I started thinking about the first time that I went to Zambia, and I thought about these kids, because I thought about being stuck in an elevator of no control of my own. I'd have to depend on somebody else to help me out. These kids, they're stuck in circumstances that they have no control over, and they are completely dependent on somebody else helping them out. So they're pushing on that button, and they're hoping that there's somebody like you out there that will send help. When you help, you send somebody like me. You may never go. I don't know. Maybe God's speaking to you to go. But when you send somebody else to help, you've responded. You've cared. And you've heard that verse that says, pure and undefiled religion is helping and caring for the widows and orphans in their distress. Thank you very much. God bless you. Don't go. Go downstairs. Have some spaghetti. Buy a t-shirt. God bless you.